Lewis has been awesome. Let's it go.
Inbounds Turner, left side of the backcourt. Turner crossed the timeline, throws it from high on the right.
He hit it!
He hit it just inside of half court!
Lane's on the other wing.
Sent it in, Jerome!
College basketball! This is March Madness!
Oh my goodness, what a time to be alive. What a time to be a college basketball fan. I'm Timmy Hall. We got Evil Bald Colin. We got Rhyme Time, Jacob Reimer. You're mad about hoops, boys. Guys, this is fun, isn't it?
This week has been the craziest week of college basketball I can remember.
It's been great. Some might say it meets my expectations.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that, CB?
I don't know. It's been really, really good.
What do you mean by that, huh?
I don't know why you think there's anything extra to
that. I don't know
if
there's anything behind that. Well, the two calls that you heard in the open just sort of bask in the glow of some of the great Buckeye moments of yesteryear and some of the Thad moments, because we're hitting a lot of anniversaries. That Evan Turner shot that you hear in the Mad About Hoops open, that was 15 years ago. We had the anniversary of that one, I think, on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. And then the Buckeyes, of course, the night before, they go down to Iowa. And Iowa's coach is already fired. Fran, dead, gone.
How about that? You play one game against the 15th seed in a Big Ten conference.
Yeah, they just barely got into the tournament.
Against Iowa, and one game later, literally 24 hours later, their coach is already out of there.
The first and last time you play Fran ever in his career, I guess you can't really say that. He could go to a different school, but the first time you played him, you lost in a tournament setting. The 8-9 matchup against Siena the last time is,
eliminating yourselves from the NCAA tournament for the third year in a row.
Which is actually fun because I saw Lunardi on Friday move Dayton ahead of Ohio State in his bracketology just to really rub the salt in the wound
Big game for the Flyers tonight against St. Joe's. We'll see what happens there. But it's so fitting for Fran to go out
tonight
as
we record the podcast.
Yes. I need to mention that.
That's the timing here, Jacob.
I'm very bad at that.
We're a podcast. We're not doing anything live right here. It's almost impossible when the trickiness with March Madness, right? So we got to kind of break down things that have already been done, you know, the way that we do it.
Preview.
I know you're stoked for what inevitably turned out to be a loss in the North Carolina Duke game part three.
We'll see. It's tough to beat a team three times.
Cooper Flagg doing the on your head celebration to you all night.
Oh yeah, he will be. And just like his parents, I won't be able to recover from it.
Oh man. You know, back to Fran for a second. Any idea how many Sweet 16s he's had his run at Iowa?
I don't think it's a lot because he was not very great in March.
It's actually zero.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Did not have a Sweet 16 run in his 15 seasons at Iowa, but you know,
it feels like they lost so many first round games they shouldn't have to.
They got to the round of 32 a lot. They got to the second round a lot.
It's crazy given the talent they've had like the past, like since COVID, basically, like with Luka Garza, Keegan Murray. I mean,
yes,
that team that won the Big Ten championship, everybody loved their path to get to a Final Four,
but
and then they lose to Richmond.
Here's what blew me away, and that's how competitive the Big Ten was when they had Luka and then when they had Murray and the Murray twins, too.
Mm-hmm.
They won a conference tournament championship. That was it. They didn't even finish higher than third. And I say, that's not a bad finish, but they didn't win a regular season or a share of a regular season championship. He had a lot of, like, earlier in his run, tied for third, tied for fifth, sixth, tied for fifth, then third in that 2020-21 team, tied for fourth in 21-22. They won the conference tournament that year. The only championship of any kind in his 15 years was that conference tournament title. And I know it's Iowa is sort of one of those middle of the pack that likes to spike and have better runs, but they're another program. I know like later on in the pod, we'll be asking the questions about what is Ohio State basketball right now. That's a big question. I get that a lot from my Buckeye basketball buddies. Same kind of things could be asked about Iowa and where they can ultimately go. One thing you know is that they have not played the portal game the way that you got to play the portal game to be at the top of college basketball anymore.
Exactly. And I'm going to say it. They're in the shadow right now in that state with Iowa State and Drake.
The shadow of Drake?
Yeah.
30-win Drake, right?
They are a team to watch.
Oh, God, yeah.
But I guess the way they probably fix that is by hiring one of those coaches.
Give McCollum. He's going to be the new Iowa coach, right?
I mean, it seems logical. I don't know why they wouldn't go with that option. He knows the area. He knows how to recruit. And clearly he can just bring guys from his roster right now that have been, you know, pretty good. So that would help.
Maybe we'll have to worry about Bennett Sturts next year in the Big Ten, which I mean, I was just as a fan of college basketball, I would love that. I would love him in a power conference. But as a fan of Ohio State, I'm not thrilled about that.
How about for some sounds of the madness that have already been in the books here, talk about a transfer that we haven't really discussed at all, I don't know, on this podcast this year. We have recently started to shed light on Louisville and what a job Pat Kelsey has done. Weaker conference, but to be at 25 wins and have, what, an 18-2 run in the ACC, weak conference or not, that's incredible. And Chucky Hepburn, who leaves Wisconsin, he was in on the madness here this week.
Five to shoot, five in the game. Edwards, no foul, missed it. Rebound on Carl Hepburn.
No!
He hit it!
No!
He hit it!
My goodness. So, guys, that play, that was not drawn up for Chucky at all. That is truly just be in the right place at the right time, and that's why you do want to maybe get that action and get the shots up before the buzzer goes off so you have that chance of an offensive rebound and a tip out in one final shot. That played out perfectly for Louisville, for Chucky to knock down the shot from pretty much the left elbow.
I just want to say, what a turnaround. I mean, what, they won single-digit games, now 20-plus. I've been told that's not supposed to happen in the first year of someone's tenure as a head coach for a program. So very good for Pat Kelsey. Man.
Very deserving of ACC Coach of the Year, in my opinion.
Do you hear this guy? The tone? I don't know how Colin even...
I don't even know how Colin exists anymore. It's the only way I can handle this because I'm just so frustrated with the state of the program. So I make jokes at my own expense to make it fun.
Never ends.
No, but honestly, Pat Kelsey's great, and he's done a great job turning that around. Granted, we've discussed plenty about how the ACC has been the past couple of years, including this year. But that doesn't take away from what they've accomplished, and they're a real team come March.
Yeah, and that shot in general, it was like a Shabazz Napier type shot against Florida.
Good pull.
It was in the regular season of that at UConn on UConn. That UConn team's run to the national championship. I'm not saying Louisville could do it, but I mean, I think they're good enough defensively. If they, it's all about path. They could make some noise.
No, I mean, I agree with that. And we can get into this when the bracket comes out on Sunday, but the path is going to be so important for so many of these teams. If UConn is sitting there in an 8-9 game, which if they continue this run in the tournament, I think they got to move up a little bit.
Yeah, I think they get up to a 7.
I mean,
seven
yeah,
then.
If they're in an 8-9 game against one of these one seeds that could be vulnerable, that's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, especially because I think like Lenardi's has it projected right now, UConn would play Duke, assuming they win their first game. And
great.
With not potentially having Cooper Flagg with the injury that he got in the Georgia Tech game, or he may not even be 100% if he plays in that game, that could be very interesting and something to watch.
Back to Louisville, I'm just stunned that they were 4-28 and then 8-24 the two seasons under Kenny Payne. My God.
And then what, 13 wins the year before that, I think?
Yeah, 13 wins, 13-19 under Chris Mack. And my goodness, and they had David Padgett for a year after Rick Pitino. So they have really been in the spin cycle here. That's Louisville basketball you're talking about. Maybe they're a step down, but not much from the original Blue Bloods from Kansas, Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, those guys. But they're, I mean, a national championship winning program two times under Denny Crum. Boy. And that three times with Rick Pitino.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have the extensive track record as maybe some of the top Blue Bloods, but they do have the funding that allows them to be up in that upper echelon pretty much year in and year out if they get the right coaching and roster.
I mean, you're in Kentucky. You're in one of the top four basketball rich states. You won three national championships. There's a standard.
Yeah.
There's a standard, and they have pressed the right buttons here, like you said, CB, in 1 year to show everybody it can get done. You can get it back and get back to being what you're supposed to be.
Yeah, and given how, at least the way the ACC is trajecting right now, like with what Pat Kelsey's been able to do, like, I think this is pretty sustainable for Louisville to continue to have great seasons. Like, he's already struggled. I know he brought a lot of guys with him in the transfer portal.
And lost a key one in Keyshawn Pryor.
Right. And they've had injuries this year. So, like, it's, yeah, it's been amazing to see this complete turnaround for Louisville basketball.
All right. CB's sarcasm will turn into real talk. What in the heck happened with this Buckeye basketball season when it looked like all signs were pointing to NCAA tournament play and then losing in the first round of the Big Ten tournament where we all think the bubble has completely burst? That's coming up. You guys are locked into Mad About Hoops.
All college basketball, all the time. You're listening to Mad About Hoops, the Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Timmy Hall, Evil Bald Colin, Jacob Reimer. Rhyme time. We are just living in the madness. While we're recording this podcast, we got daytime basketball. I don't know what meme I saw. I don't know what the meme was, because I've been using the LeBron one. That one's been fitting for me, where he's just out there in the sunshine, and this is my life right now. It's great. You just open up your windows. You got buzzer beaters, great finishes. Daytime basketball. There's something about it. It's just good for your soul. I don't even care what teams are playing. It's just good for the heart to have the sun beaming in, the weather's picking up. That's what's great about this time of year. You change seasons and you get the best basketball happening right now.
I found the meme you're talking about, because the guy that you quote tweeted, Cole Adams, he's a great follow if you don't follow him already on Twitter. I'm not sure of the movie, because I'm not
Show
a movie
it to me, because I'll know it. It's Spider-Man. It's Tobey Maguire.
There goes my knowledge of movies. But
yeah, read the meme.
It says he's not unemployed. He's just watching midday college basketball.
That's right. That's right.
That's been me this whole week.
Midday college basketball watcher. And I was sick on Thursday.
I was going to say, your mood has definitely swung, because I thought you avoided coming into the office the day after the loss, and then you're in here wearing a Weber State jersey. Well,
it was a late night, too, you know?
It was. I didn't make it to the Kentucky game. Ridiculously late. I did enjoy some DePaul Creighton. Check out some DePaul Creighton?
I was actually watching a lot of Texas Tech and Baylor, because I feel like I know Texas Tech, but I didn't have a full grasp on them. Well, when we get close to the Selection Sunday, I want to better understand some of these top level teams that I haven't seen play a lot compared to the others, and how they're going to match up with their past. And I got to say, I mean, obviously Texas Tech is pretty good, being the 2 seed in the Big 12 Conference tournament, but they're actually really, really impressive.
Yeah, JT Toppin is a problem. I think he's an All-American level type player. Yeah, player of the year in the conference. Elijah Hawkins is a really great orchestrator of their offense and can really get them going into a flow of a game. I think we've said it a lot now, but it is all about path. But I think regardless of it, they have the tools on both sides of the ball to where they can still make some noise, where regardless of who is in their path.
And I know Grant McCaslin's kind of a Texas area guy, now being down there in Lubbock with Texas Tech, but I'm curious to see what his stock will be as he continues to rise in a profession, and what some of these blue bloods or bigger programs start going after him.
JT Toppin, get it popping, man. His last 3 games, 30-14 against Colorado, 25-11 on the road against Arizona State, 26-10 at the time of this recording when they got that win over Baylor. That dude, he's unbelievable. And a 1-year transfer over from a program like New Mexico. Sucks that Richard Pitino didn't get him anymore. Yeah. But again, another one of those examples of, you know, just 1 year under his belt, but he's a star. Some guys are stars and just built for this. Some guys, like when we'll talk about Ohio State and what they should try
AJ
to construct.
In Kansas.
Yeah. I mean, it's crippling. Crippling, right?
He has a good game.
A good game, and then he goes back to doing nothing.
I'll tell you one game I stopped watching was Arizona and Kansas, because that just got out of hand. Hurts.
That talk about not good.
Dickinson
for the soul.
Was taken to school down in the post by Henry Vessar. Is that how I pronounce it? They had no answers for the post game of Arizona.
Oh no! To the Kentucky game, I was able to make it through that. I was dozing in and out of it, and I got to about a minute and a half left. Kentucky's up 10. I was like, yeah, I think this is over. And I'm just laying there on the couch with my dog and watching the game. And all of a sudden it's getting a little bit closer and Oklahoma's pressing. And then Here's Owe with two turnovers, trying to rush it up the floor, pass it, gets deflected away, and then Jeremiah Fears, who is a walking bucket. I think if Oklahoma gets to the tournament, he could be a name to watch. But he gets to the rim with a nice layup to give Oklahoma a lead late in the game with less than 10 seconds left. And then all of a sudden, here comes Owe to redeem himself all the way down the floor with a ridiculously tough layup to get the bucket
against
to go and the win.
Against his former team, by the way.
Against his former team. That's twice now in less than 2 weeks where he has beat them in the final seconds because of just crazy finishes.
And totally redeem yourself. So while you were talking about the Kentucky finish, I'm looking back at the Arizona box score. And CB mentioned the big dude's name. And yeah, I heard his name 35 times last night. And Vsar, I think it's like Vsar, whatever. But it's interesting because there was a transfer portal battle, and Trey Townsend was the other dude not named Golkey. Everybody was in on Golkey, Jack Golkey for Oakland, who we saw.
He was
saw.
The player of the year in that conference for that
Trey
team.
Townsend, stud with Oakland. I mean, do everything. Could score it, can rebound. And he's had a nice year with Arizona. But I think with their bigs, he has kind of been – they've got Awaka there who's done some things, and Vsar had 19 points and 4 boards off the bench last night, just dominated. But Townsend had some really good plays too. And when that game was still in the balance, they went down to the post. Townsend, they had a nice action that got him cutting to the basket. He got a nice layup. He had 16 points. And that was a guy that I really, really wanted for Ohio State. More of a regional transfer. I thought that could have been a great fit and a guy that could have done a multitude of things for Buckeye Hoops.
I'm with you. I've watched a lot of Arizona games this year, one being because Caleb Love, being a former North Carolina guy, and he's playing there doing his thing in Tucson. But, yeah, their front court play led by Trey Townsend is phenomenal. It's you've got problems everywhere with Awaka, I can't think of his name. But Carter Bryant's a freshman that they have that can stretch the floor. And they can rebound, they can hang with anybody, it seems like. Like, with their guard play, Caleb Love, Jaden Bradley, and KJ Lewis, that's a team to watch too.
Yeah, he probably didn't have the year in terms of Townsend, the year he probably hoped for, but I think this is just because of the roster buildup and how Arizona's built. Again, he went to the Rich Get Richer type of program where he had to battle a lot versus Ohio State. He'd probably been a dependable 30-plus minutes a game type of guy.
Absolutely.
But you know what? I'm guessing it's working out for him because he's contributing now more than he was early in the season on a team that has a real Final Four capability.
All right, so we hardly got to it yet. But let's go around the horn because I know this conversation will bleed over for the rest of the podcast. But the Buckeyes had their shot this year. They were living in the NCAA tournament picture pretty much since that Maryland win, a big home win over Maryland. And then after that, it just seemed like they struggled to find consistent play. The offense was stagnant in most of those games. They were unable to go on big offensive scoring runs, and then their defense just steadily declined as the season came to a head, and it just didn't work. And it ends with the loss to Iowa, and they're not going to get into the NCAA tournament, but it just becomes incredibly disappointing. And part of it for me is it can't all be on Jake Diebler's head because it's your first full season as a head coach, but you get lumped into this, and there's disappointment for the program in general, as there should be, to be going 3 straight years and not dancing is not cool. And that's sort of the immediacy of it. And it's the world we live in, but it's also the fact that despite some roster issues, you were pretty much living in the picture for a while here. So then it becomes the job to whatever means necessary to find a way to get it done and get it across the finish line. And they failed at that.
But what's really sad is I think you were kind of afforded that opportunity for longer than probably you should have because the bubble has been so soft this year compared to last year. Again, they finished with a worse record this year than they did last year. Now, granted, they played a tougher non-conference than the final year of Holtman. But
Much tougher this year's non-conference.
No, you nailed it. The point about Jake Diebler, the performances by the players technically is not on him. It's the talent acquisition and the offseason moves that don't work out that you can point back into the direction of the leadership of the program. Now, you got to figure out how you fix that this offseason. And honestly, it comes down to just you know, you got to really overturn this roster and get in the guys that can impact you in a positive way immediately, because they're honestly in a very, it almost feels like an emergency on the type of guys they need to bring in, the amount of guys they need to bring in.
Yeah, and I've gotten a sense from Dealer since he started that the style of play that he wants to get them to play at is run and gun, get points quickly, maybe not just put up a ton of threes, but running in transition, getting points at the rim, getting paint touches to then transition threes. And I just don't think that this current roster has the guys to do that.
Which is ironic, because they did that in his run late in the year.
Exactly.
They were a much higher tempo team. They went on that run of wins.
Yeah, well, they went 6 of 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When he took over, or 6 of 7, it was a great little
stretch.
And
then you turn it to this year, the pace started completely to slow different. Down, and you lost, I think it was like 5 of the last 7, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a complete opposite, just based off of maybe it was the roster makeup, or maybe it was just a philosophy of you thought, I'm kind of limited in what I can do.
I do think, as we keep the conversation going here on Buckeye basketball and their 77-70 loss to Iowa that puts them at 17-15 overall record, the same mark as Iowa after that game. Different wow. resumes, of course, but the same mark of a team there that they just fired their coach of 15 years. But two big reasons for me, I think, can be looked at. We'll touch on that. You guys are locked in to Mad About Hoops.
One of these men is evil and bald. The other one is Timmy Hall, swinging his meat bat. You're listening to Mad About Hoops on The Fan.
Timmy Hall, evil bald Colin, Jacob Reimer, rhyme time. We sure wish that we are dancing for our team, for the Ohio State Buckeyes, but 3 straight years, not going to be doing that. And as much as we can talk about program, as much as we can talk about, you know, team performance down the stretch and what they did with what they had, what about what they didn't have? As CB's got to step out right now to do part of his other gig. See you later, CB.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So it's me and rhyme time for this one. But we know. Michi Johnson, Aaron Bradshaw. Mm-hmm. I think two of the big reasons why this team wasn't able to be 3, 4, maybe 5 games better. They had so many winnable games. What I would call, you know, contested games against good opponents, conference teams or good opponents, where you're in a 2-possession game. You know, game wasn't, you know, you didn't get dusted by Auburn or Maryland like those, throw those to the side.
Right.
You blew out Kentucky, which was great, right? Mm-hmm. So push that one off to the side. But 15 games I counted out that were sort of like that. 2-possession games into crunch time, final 5 minutes, Ron Stokes winning time. They won 5 of them, all right? So that means you lost 10 of those types of games.
Yeah.
Having critical transfer portal players that were not just slated to start, but be big-time players, and you get basically nada. One guy's gone from the team early on. The other guy is gone for a while and has a questionable thing where there's some university investigation. Didn't know if Bradshaw was even going to be back. And when he is back, he can't rebound. He can't play defense. He can't play offense.
Yeah.
It's crippling when you miss on two guys like that.
Yeah. So when coming into the year, when you had those pickups in the offseason, it was looked at that Michi Johnson was going to bring that experienced scoring option and help take some pressure off of Bruce in the backcourt. And he showed that in the year prior at South Carolina, where they were a tournament team. Lamont Paris was a coach of the year in the SEC. And I was very high on it coming in. He's a lot more experienced than what he was coming in here. And like I just said, he's going to take some pressure off of Bruce. But then, yeah, when you don't have that and you're then relying on Bruce to take on a much heavier load while you're bringing along a freshman and John Mobley Jr., who's trying to get himself into this. And I thought he did a pretty good job in most games, but still, you wanted that added scoring in the backcourt to win you games down the stretch of a tight game like all the close losses that they had.
Well, and the questions, too, just the questions will remain.
Yeah.
What happened on the Michi front?
It was just so...
What happened? You never got any answers. You asked the media, asked the questions for a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and it's just, you know, he's taking care of some things. It just was kind of kicking the can down the road. And
yeah.
You all knew it. Like, everybody knew it. This guy, he's never coming back. But WTF, right? Yeah. Like, what's going
what
on?
What happened inside that?
If something happened,
if
something happened
outside,
with his family, I think everybody would be sensitive to that and understanding. But
we have no idea.
If it was just guys not getting along and not, that's another thing that's a tougher pill to swallow.
But that's a thing with this transfer portal, because like you're basically flipping rosters each year.
But that should have been the one example where you didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, this is true.
Because you had a previous relationship, and he was already an Ohio State guy and an Ohio kid.
Yeah.
You thought, for one, I get it, because you're right. This is the game you have to play, and this is sort of the nasty side of it, maybe. I think, again, because don't know, really don't know. But you've got to really do your research and be sure, even about guys you thought maybe you were sure about.
Yeah.
Something didn't work here.
Yeah, it's a crazy world with what the transfer portal is, because you can strike gold with it sometimes, and like we're seeing with some of the teams in the SEC, like Rick Barnes turning Dalton Kanek into Chaz Lanier. But there's also
How about that?
Yeah, it was
mid-major dudes that are stars.
Yeah.
Of the best conference in basketball, two straight years for Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think what Micah Parrish has done has been great at Ohio State, but then you've also got the Michi Johnsons, who then just disappears from the program. Like you mentioned, Bradshaw, with everything that he had going on in the non-conference part of the schedule. And then when he is here, it's very inconsistent. Sean Stewart wasn't what it was expected, with him constantly getting into foul trouble. We really didn't see much of him on the floor.
He played better late.
Yes.
But just very okay.
Yeah.
Again, for... And boy, oh boy, does this sort of give you some stuff to work on for this upcoming cycle, where you went with two guys, potential over production.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard my man Adam Jardy, the Dispatch, like he's used that phrasing for it too. When you're looking in the portal, are you looking for potential or are you looking for proven production? And it's not to say that proven production will 100% of the time work in the new spot. You can even have misses there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had a miss with Tanner Holden, who is a big-time scorer in a mid-major. I don't know what happened, and he just never seemed to fit. They never seemed to get him on the court and get him minutes, but at times he'd have a game here or there where you're like, this guy really knows what he's doing. He can get to spots and score. But to have Sean Stewart and Aaron Bradshaw as your guys to be your starting front court, you can't really comprehend two bigger misses than that.
And, I mean, I get it. They were coming from a Duke and a Kentucky, but they were maybe getting 5 minutes a game there.
They didn't really...
I know they were five stars coming into
it. Get off the ground. And now you think of, like, there's reasons why they didn't really get off the ground.
But then this
at those
is
spots,
to,
you know?
You follow the Rick Barnes path and try to get one of those guys from the mid-major level that is an elite scorer and is proven that he can fill it up. And maybe that's where Diebler turns his focus to in the offseason when building this roster, because we have no idea what it's going to be, and he does kind of get it. I hate to say it, he does kind of get a head start on it with what the portal is, and that's how you have to go about it for this offseason.
Well, the one thing, too, and again, this is so – I want to make it very clear. I'm going to believe in Jake Diebler. I'm going to give
– Me too.
I'm going to give this guy his
He's
shot.
Won some
I,
very
I like
big
him.
Games.
He's won some very big games. I think when his team is locked in, you can see his offensive system.
Yeah.
Like you can see some, even it's been mostly half court this year, so we got to see a lot of that. You've gotten to see some of the ball movement and some of the kick and drive and some of the, you know, just getting the ball in your hot player's hands and letting him have that space to get into the paint and do what they do. Like a guy like Bruce Thornton, who's just been a half court killer, right? That's the one thing I struggle with, is why Bruce was part of the up-tempo style late last year, but maybe what's ingrained in him isn't really built for that, or that's not really what he wants to do.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder about him. But you've seen a lot of good from Jake Diebler and what he can do, and I'm not blaming him for getting this job at Ohio State. And I'll give everybody their fair shot, and 1 year is just too much to bury a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had them on the bubble. He had them... This wasn't a disaster season for Ohio
State
for a first year.
There was hope after the wins against Kentucky, Purdue, Texas to start the
year.
There
was hope. There was hope.
Like after that Texas win, I was like, oh my gosh, yes. This is a tournament team, the way they can put the ball in the bucket.
And they missed big time on some of the roster moves.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for, is they missed big time with some of these decisions, and they still had 3, 4, 5 games here late in the season to try to brush up an NCAA tournament resume. So imagine what they can do if they hit, if they hit a bunch of home runs in the transfer portal. And it's almost, hopefully I'll go with that's a good thing. Going with guys like Bradshaw and Stewart who didn't have the production, who didn't have any proof in there. Team up north, right? Other than a guy that you know what he can do because you coached him at FAU, you go with a Yale kind of guy and a Danny Wolf.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for with a big guy. Maybe he's not a star at a big conference. You're not getting, you know, the Hunter Dickinson transfer over big conference to big conference, but something with some value there. I don't have a name for you at the moment, but something like that.
There's definitely some guys out there that can, because I mean the portal these past 2 years has been just pure chaos. And it's definitely going to be again this year just because that's the world we're in. There's definitely going to be a name out there that can come in and provide an impact like that if it's what Diebler can land.
All right, so there's some real talk with Buckeye basketball right now. What are they right now? What is Ohio State Hoops?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You have to be real about it, right?
It's a lot of uncertainty.
You're a once famous program that now is struggling to make NCAA tournament appearances.
Yeah.
And that's what you are. And some people want to go like below bar, like be careful you'll be Minnesota. Be careful you'll be Penn State. Mm. They're way, way, way more successful than those programs.
Yes.
But it's, you know, they were ranked a lot in the Holtman years. They made tournaments. They were a lock for the pandemic year too. They were a lock. They were a 5 or 6 seed that year. They're not as bad as people make them out to be, but they're also nowhere near what you want to be they're supposed to be.
They're on a short list of teams in college basketball that have made 10-plus Final Fours. I know they haven't made one since 2012.
And they had one subtracted that would be 11.
Right.
Right?
Like that's,
which is right behind, I think, Kansas.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
And that's
in history. So you gotta recognize that. That means something.
That is the group you are supposed to be a part of. Like that's rare air up there with some of those programs. And Ohio State is in that mix of going on deep runs in March. I know it hasn't been since 2012, but they're capable. And
it's
got
to be back, and the importance has to be there. Where do you think Ohio State athletics is with operating budget? One. Where do you think they are in revenue, their athletics department?
Yeah.
One, what do you think their valuation is, their athletics department? $1.3 billion.
Yeah.
Number one.
There's. I mean, you're looking at...
Men's basketball's got to perform
got
with those kind of numbers.
We've got the SEC on right now, and the way Auburn and Alabama have looked this year and becoming basketball schools along with football schools, there's no reason Ohio State can't be that as well.
All right, some more of the sounds of this week in college basketball. Championship week, always a great one. Some could say even love it more than next week because we're saving ourselves the good stuff for the NCAA tournament, but it's still daytime basketball. It's still tournament. It's still buzzer beaters. It's just like a super, super delicious appetizer that you don't want to end. It's fried pickle chips and a blooming onion. It's like the best stuff before the meal. But the coach that you love to hate had a good one. We'll get to some of that here. You're locked into Mad About Hoops.
All the college basketball talk you can handle. You're listening to Mad About Hoops. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Timmy Hall, Evil Bald Collins stepped out. Rhyme time, Jacob Reimer. Poor Evil, man.
I know.
Just gets yanked in so many different directions.
Right before the segment he would have loved.
Right before that second Buckeye basketball segment. We do say hello to all of our listeners on the replay on the Fan Saturday morning. I wish I could really set the table for what was coming up on this fine day. It's going to be great.
Hopefully you're listening fresh off a North Carolina win against Duke that gets them into the tournament.
I think they are.
Please don't be reverse jinxing
me. I'm not. I'm really cool with it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really cool with it. I was telling some stories back there. We were before the podcast. We were going down a YouTube wormhole. College basketball YouTube wormholes are great this time of year because it simply started with just buzzer beaters, just NCAA tournament buzzer beaters, and We had Bryce Drew, Valpo, right? Yeah. Jake Diebler connection there. I know that's probably number one in his heart. It's a classic to beat Ole Miss. Ole Miss is good again, mm-hmm. and they'll be in the tournament. And then we had Jalen Suggs in the pandemic year.
Oh, my goodness.
I just love the call and how Jim Nance is so buttoned up, right? But they're all so giddy when he hits that.
Yeah.
Jalen Suggs hits the buzzer beater right after what you thought was the Johnny Juzang almost buzzer mm-hmm. beater. Off the offensive rebound, miss, puts it back up and in. Suggs is going 3.5 seconds left, just inside of half court. Boom, knocks it down. And there, Grant Hill and Raftery is almost speechless, and they're all just, oh, oh, a kiss with the onions. Yes. It's just, it's so good. And then Chris Jenkins, sorry to say,
kind of
finished that YouTube wormhole with the Villanova bang.
But you can't forget about the Marcus Page drop.
The Marcus
that.
Page double clutch.
That was ridiculous.
Double clutch three. What is that?
If this game goes to overtime, man. North Carolina is winning it. And of course, you don't pick up the guy trailing. Chris Jenkins drills it and just has me on the floor for the next hour in pain.
So we went from that. And then for whatever reason, we were talking about not Bill Raftery, Billy Packer, who did the Final Four for 30, mm-hmm. Years and years and years. One of the legends, famous dude. I don't like him, though, personally, as much as some of these other guys now. Certainly Raftery is way, way, way ahead of Packer for me. But it got me thinking about the North Carolina Duke game where Gerald Henderson decided to punch Tyler Hansbrough in the face. A 12-point game at the end, he gets his offensive rebound miss and goes back up like you do. And Billy Packer just nonchalantly, low-key saying, I don't see what the problem was. I didn't see any ill will or didn't think it was a dirty basketball play at all. I'm thinking, it's not, but it was maybe one of the more hardcore moments in Dean Dome history. Something a Duke guy would say. But, I mean, the blood just pouring from Hansbrough's face. Classic
all
clip.
All over the jersey.
All over. I mean, broke his nose.
Yeah.
Punched him in the face.
Yeah.
And he had to leave the game, and it was just a stunning scene. But just the kind of things that you can just get lost in your college basketball memories, even if it's not an actual tournament memory. They really just rush back to you here this week.
So we've got Carolina Duke playing tonight or on the day of this recording.
Tonight.
I know.
Day
of this recording.
Come on.
I got to get used to that. But I go back to when they last played in the ACC tournament in 2019 in Zion's first edition of the Carolina Duke rivalry because he missed. Well, he had the injury in the first game in the first few seconds and then didn't play in the second game. But I know North Carolina lost that game, but it's a game that I always go back and catch myself watching just because it was such a good basketball game. Back and forth, one of the best Carolina Duke games I can remember. Kobe White was just a blur in the open floor. There's always that sequence where Zion dunks it in on the other side and he falls to the ground, and then they get it going in transition, and it didn't dribble. Three passes to Cam Johnson dunking it in at the end. It was just a beautiful sequence.
So this was classic stuff from Rick Pitino, right? This is
the Godfather.
This is the guy that I love to hate because you think about who he is as a basketball coach and what he's doing at St. John's, and it just cannot be ignored, right?
Right.
All the personal stuff, I've said my piece on that. It's bad. I don't like it. That's back then. This is what we're doing now. And the way that he just has carte blanche to be who he is, just be so true to who he is as a coach, and the way he can verbalize things to his players. We've seen some of the clips about the documentary, the one halftime they had against Providence, where he's like, where is your effing toughness?
Yeah.
How weak can you be? The first sign of adversity, you just wilt. That's not life. That's not basketball either. Like, and they go out and they win that game. This was just classic. And I love this kind of stuff. This is about one of their players who is playing during Ramadan here, which is a lot of things, like religious things for different players, right? We got Lent, we got Ramadan, all these things.
Yeah.
BYU can't play on a Sunday, right? They have to be seated that way for the NCAA tournament. But here was Rick Pitino.
You're getting that production out of the guys like Sadiku and Lefty and Vince. How much more dangerous does that make this team?
Well, Sadiku said he's getting a lot of fluids, IV fluids, before the game. While it's dark, he's getting IV fluids before the game, which helps the Ramadan. I asked the trainers and him, can we get something in the IV to help his defense.
Just pure, right? Yeah. Just beautiful. Yeah. And this is a guy that is what, like the 13th guy, 11th guy on their bench who averages 1.9 and 1.2. And that's what he said. That's what he says about that dude.
Yeah.
It's hilarious,
just,
though.
He's just connected with his team, I guess.
You're cool. Yeah. It's cool. He threw him under the bus last year and then again this year. Like, that's what you do if you know what you're doing, if you know how to do it and be that guy. It can push the right buttons. And clearly, it has worked.
Exactly. Like, they are a very dangerous team when it gets to the next couple of weeks. Like, if you're a one seed, because I think they'll end up a two seed, maybe a three, if they drop one here in the Big East tournament. But that's still a team that you don't want to see in your region as a one seed.
No.
Yeah.
You don't want to see them. I would like to see Zuby Ejiofor back at KU.
Yeah.
That's what I would have liked to see.
That's a tough one to let go there.
It didn't happen. Before we're done, we didn't even describe the shirt choices for this pod. You're in a very classic, just it's a navy blue, but North Carolina basketball tee with the little Jordan Jumpman logo on the top left. It's nice. Mm-hmm. It's clean.
A little dry fit material.
And then kind of ironic that I am wearing one of my mid-major guys. I went to school for a couple years at Weber State University in Ogden, Utah.
Same time.
I was there for a good season when they were 14-0. And won the Big Sky and wound up as a 12 seed, which is crazy for Big Sky. Their 2003 team with Jermaine Boyette. He was a killer. Look him up. And they lose to Wisconsin in a 12-5 game. I went to it in Spokane. But everyone knows the big run, the big win, was Weber State over Ed Cota, Chris Lang's North Carolina Tar Heels in the late 90s with Harold the Show Arsenault. One of the great, great little guy killers in NCAA tournament history with one of the best names of all time. Harold the Show Arsenault.
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me with a name like that.
That's definitely a name. Like, you look for that at this time of year. Yeah. Like, some guys with
Wally
some
Zerbiak,
names,
you know?
Exactly. That are going to sweep a nation in college basketball. And as fans are getting into it this time of year and drawing the attention to them, like, oh man, this guy is fun. He's got the name and everything. Thankfully, I can say I probably wasn't alive for that, so
You didn't have to feel the pain of that one.
No, I don't.
But one of the great, obviously the greatest moment in Weber State basketball history was getting that win. And
if you would have told me you were wearing a jersey, I would have worn my Joel Berry jersey for today.
That Weber State team fought Florida really tough in the second round game, and that was a Florida team that went on, that was the Mike Miller squad that went on to the Final Four that year. All right, so let's get our rest, shall we?
We sleep in May, Timmy.
We try to find pockets. Hey, good thing, though, is the sickness didn't even allow me to sleep this week.
There you go.
Couldn't even try to go.
It's a good thing
we
got basketball on all day.
It wouldn't happen for me.
Kentucky and Oklahoma was a real thriller late into the night on Thursday.
All day basketball, Saturday, Sunday, Selection Sunday, and then the NCAA tournament. The next time we are doing this pod. Thank you guys so much for listening. Obviously, the full unfiltered podcast, unedited, is simply available anywhere you get your audio. So just search up Mad About Hoops, download, subscribe. It's all right there for you, completely free.
Well, and we'll be doing a live show during the selection show.
Yes, we will. Yeah. So if you're listening to this on our Saturday replay on The Fan, do not forget, right around 5:45 Sunday evening on The Fan's YouTube channel, you, me, Evil Bald Colin, we'll be breaking down the brackets, following some of the paths and what sticks out to us. It'll be a lot of fun. Everybody, enjoy the hoops. Thanks for listening to Mad About Hoops.